This is Audible.
Emily Winsnap and the Ship of Lost Souls by Liz Kessler. Read by Amy Antiknap. Behold her on the silent sea, yon vessel like a spirit there, moved in a dream's reality, as if she trod the air. None can tell from what creek or bay she sailed out, or by night or day. They watch her like a vision gone over the sea's oblivion. From The Ghost Ship by Robert Crawford, 1868 to 1930. Chapter 1. Year 8, Week 2, Assignment 1. What I did in my summer holidays. I chewed the end of my pen and tried to think of something I could say that wouldn't make Mr. Rowlands, my new form teacher, think I'd made it up. I had the feeling that if I wrote, I went on holiday to an ice-filled land where I found people's lost memories in a magical pool, helped unfreeze Neptune's evil brother, turned him into a mountain, and ultimately saved the future of the world, it might come back with, "Fail, this is meant to be fact, not fiction," scrawled across it in red pen. So I decided to write about my birthday instead. I turned 13 on the 4th of September, just before we came back to school. Yes, I know, I look much younger. I'm the oldest in my class, and the smallest as well, which is kind of weird. Not half as weird as everything else about me, though. And this last year was a bit different from usual, what with discovering I was a mermaid, freeing my dad from a prison out at sea, nearly getting squeezed to death by a sea monster, and having about a million adventures in the ocean. Oh, and getting a boyfriend. All of which meant that by the time my birthday came around, I was more than ready to celebrate. I set to work, writing about my birthday party, and wondering what I would be doing if I were at Shiprock Mermaid School right now, instead of Brightport High. Since we came back to Brightport, my parents and I had spent weeks discussing how my schooling was going to work. When you're half human and half mermaid, decisions like these are trickier than they are for most people. We finally came up with an answer, just before the term started. The deal was that I'd go to normal school, Mum's word, not mine. Mum's the full-time human in the family, from Monday to Thursday. And because nothing much of any use ever seems to happen at that school on Fridays, Dad's phrase, not mine, he's the merman, and the one who'd like me to be learning siren songs and ocean rhythms every day, I would go to mermaid school on Fridays and Saturdays. Shiprock have school on Saturday mornings, so at least I'd get a couple of days a week there. It wasn't the perfect solution, but it was keeping the three of us happy for now. At least Mum and Dad were happy. I wasn't so sure about myself. Every time I sat in lessons doing things like writing essays about what I'd done in my summer holidays, I wished I was with my best friend and full-time mermaid, Shona, learning about sirens and shipwrecks, or how to make a trampoline out of fishing rope, or the 100 other things that I learned out in the ocean. Trouble was, when I was at Shiprock, I spent half my time worrying about what I was missing at Brightport. Mandy Rushton, my one-time enemy, now a good friend, always filled me in, but it wasn't the same. See, Dad was right. Nothing much of any use ever did happen on Fridays, but it was when people had the most fun. Whichever way I looked at it, it seemed I was missing out. The only silver lining was that as Aaron, my boyfriend, is a semi-mer like me, he had the same arrangement, which meant that he was in the same place as I was, no matter which day of the week it was. And I had to admit, that mostly made all of it better.
"Okay, folks, the bell's going to go in a minute, so finish the sentence you're writing and put your pens down."
Mr. Rowland shuffled papers around on his desk while he waited to get everyone's attention. A second later, the bell for next lesson went. Mr. Rollins called over the noise of chairs scraping on the floor.
Chairs behind your desks, and don't forget your homework. Oh, and there's a letter for each of you to take home for your parents. Please pick up an envelope on your way out of the classroom.
What's this all about, then? Mandy mumbled as we collected our letters. The envelopes were sealed, so we couldn't see what was in them. On the front, they just said, To the parents of Brightport High, Year 8 children. On the back, each was labelled with the words, An exciting invitation from Five Bays Island. As I read the words, I felt a funny sensation inside me, a bit like a tail flicking around in my stomach. I had mixed feelings when it came to islands. On the one hand, an island by definition is surrounded by sea, which is totally brilliant, obviously, as it generally means lots of opportunities for the mermaid part of me to go out exploring in the ocean. On the other hand, I'd had some of the worst experiences of my life on an island, including nearly being squeezed to death by a sea monster, which isn't as much fun. Five Bays Island, Mandy read aloud. Sounds cool. And as I pocketed my letter, I had to agree. On balance, Five Bays Island sounded very cool. I forgot about the letter for the rest of the day. It was only once I got home and was unpacking my bag that I remembered it. Oh, Mum, Dad, this is for you, I said, passing it over to Mum. Mum took the letter from me and reached for her glasses as Dad popped his head up from below deck. We live on a boat moored in Brightport Harbour. It's a beautiful old ship that's been specially adapted so merpeople and humans can both live in it.
Hey, little 'un, how was school?
Dad asked, flicking wet hair off his face and smiling up at me. I took my shoes and socks off and sat on the edge of the gap in the floor, dangling my feet in the water. Just my toes, so my legs wouldn't turn into a tail. Part of the new deal was that I had to do my homework before going in the water. I shrugged. Okay. I nodded over to the table where Mum had opened the envelope and was now sitting reading the letter. We were given those. Dad looked over.
What is it?
Emily's class has been invited to visit an island for a geography field trip at the end of this month, Mum replied. I was busy emptying my bag of all the rubbish I'd accumulated through the day. My heart thumped down on the table, along with my browning apple core. So it was just a geography field trip, the dullest thing in the world. They'll be studying rare birds and exotic plants and unusual geological formations, Mum went on. Then she looked across at us and added,
It's for a whole week.
I dropped my homework diary on the table with a thud. A whole week studying birds, plants and rocks? Really?
Oh, and there are shipwrecks and some interesting sea life too,
Mum went on.
They'll organise glass-bottomed boat trips.
Shipwrecks and sea life? That sounded much better. But they could forget the glass-bottomed boat trips. If shipwrecks and sea life were on the cards, I wanted to go underwater and see them up close.
I think she should go,
Dad said.
Me too,
Mum added. Yeah, I think so too, I agreed. If my record with islands was anything to go by, who knew? Perhaps I'd find myself caught up in an adventure while I was there. That evening, Aaron and I swam out to Rainbow Rocks to meet up with Shona and Seth. Seth is Shona's boyfriend. Well, she hasn't officially called him her boyfriend yet, but I know she'd like to. They met in the summer when he helped us to save Neptune from his evil twin. As a thank you, Neptune made him one of his advisors. He's only 14, so he's the youngest merboy ever to hold such a high position. But it means he doesn't get to hang out with us all that often, as he's pretty much at Neptune's beck and call. Luckily, he had the evening off and could join us. Swimming over to meet them with Aaron, I forgot all about school and geography field trips. When I was in the water like this, everything else floated away. Nothing that happened at Brightport High could ever come close to the feeling of zooming along, racing a shoal of tiny bright blue fish, or darting in and out of coral and rocks, or gliding along on a warm current holding Aaron's hand. When we arrived at Rainbow Rocks, Shona waved us over and pulled me in for an excited hug. Seth and Aaron greeted each other with more boy-like greetings, i.e. a grunt and a nod.
"The best thing happened today! I've been dying to tell you!" Shona squealed.
"You came top in the B&D test," I ventured. Beauty and deportment is Shona's favourite subject. It's all about sitting correctly on rocks and brushing your hair smoothly while singing siren songs at a perfect pitch. I'm not very good at it myself. It always feels a bit like that game where you have to rub your tummy and pat your head at the same time. I've never been any good at that either.
"No, well, yes, I did, actually," Shona said, blushing a little. "But it's not that."
"Mrs. Sharktail accidentally put her skirt on backwards," Aaron offered.
Mrs. Sharktail is the head teacher at Shiprock School, and ever since embarrassing Aaron and me in front of the whole school for being semi-mers, she hasn't been on our list of favourite people. Seth laughed.
"That would be funny," he said.
Shona was getting impatient.
"I'll tell you, it's a geography reef trip. It's in a few weeks. We're going to study shipwrecks and sea life and..."
"Is it at Five Bays Island?" I asked.
"Yes. How did you know?"
"I asked if you could come, but Mr. Finsplash said he doesn't think you'll be allowed, because you have to attend full time and..."
"I'm going," I squealed.
"We both are,"
Aaron added. Shona stared at us both.
"You are? But how come? Mr. Finsplash said..."
"We're going with Brightport High. I'm guessing it's the same week," I grinned. "They must have sent letters to both schools at the same time." Shona grinned back.
"Swishy!"
She jumped so high her tail came out of the water.
"Oh, it's going to be such fun! Mr. Finsplash says the island has a shallow reef all the way around it. There are loads of amazing rock formations, and there are shipwrecks and hundreds of varieties of fish that you don't get anywhere else. And guess how it got its name?"
Aaron scratched his chin and scowled as if thinking hard.
"I'm going out on a fin here, but does the island by any chance have five bays?"
"Yes!"
Shona glanced at Aaron and realised he was laughing.
"Oh," she said, flicking water at him. "Well, okay, I suppose that might have been obvious."
"It sounds swishy,"
Seth said with a shy smile. He didn't strike me as the kind of boy who would normally use Shona's favourite word, swishy, to describe something fun. I reckon that meant he was definitely her boyfriend.
"Wish I could join you."
"Maybe you could ask Neptune for a few days off," Aaron suggested.
"That would be super swishy," Shona exclaimed,
clapping her hands so excitedly she splashed seawater in my face. Then she turned as red as a snapperfish and tried, belatedly, to look unconcerned.
"That's if, you know, you want to," she added with a shrug.
Seth smiled.
"I'd love to," he said. "I'll try, but you know Neptune."
Oh, yes. I knew Neptune. Probably better than any of them. The king of all the oceans was not someone you messed about with, or someone who granted favours lightly. I'd been on his wrong side often enough to know that.
"I'll give it a try," Seth said again.
Then he reached out to take Shona's hand.
"It would be great to spend the week with you guys."
Shona beamed as brightly as the multicoloured rocks behind her.
"Come on,"
she said, swimming away, presumably before Seth could see that her face had turned even redder.
"Let's go to the playground. A load of netting floated in the other day, and I've started making a trampoline."
We followed Shona through the water. As I swam, I thought about the upcoming trip. I was looking forward to a simple week away with my friends, with no drama.
No frozen people, no sea monsters, no prisons guarded by hammerhead sharks. Just a nice, normal week, with maybe the tiniest adventure thrown in for a bit of excitement. Whatever else happened, I was determined that my trip to Five Bays Island would be free from anything weird and scary. Not that it was up to me, of course. Chapter 2 September passed quickly, and it wasn't long before I was packing a bag and getting ready to join my classmates on the promenade. It was Saturday morning, and a bus was picking us up at noon to take us on the mammoth journey. A 5-hour drive up the coast and a 4-hour crossing on a boat over to Five Bays Island. With any luck, we'd be there before nightfall. I squashed my last bits and pieces into my bag and pulled the zip shut.
"You've packed all your geography books and your binoculars for the birds, haven't you?"
Mum asked.
"Yes, Mum."
"And the charts I gave you so you can recognise and record all the fish?"
Dad added.
"Yep."
Mum held her arms out.
"I'm going to miss you, sweet pea," she said as I hugged her.
Dad leaned on the trapdoor and reached up to kiss me on the cheek.
"Me too, little'un."
I wasn't sure if they should really still be calling me things like Sweet Pea and Little'un now I'd turned 13, but as I was leaving them for a week, and every other time I'd left them recently, my life had been in danger from either a kraken, an evil iceman, or an ancient curse, I decided to let them off. Clutching my bag, I stepped off the boat and made my way along the wooden jetty that led up to the pier.
"Hey, Emily!"
A voice called from ahead of me. It was Mandy. I waved at her.
"Wait for me!"
As we made our way up the pier, I could see the group of children waiting. There were only 12 of us on the trip. Not everyone had chosen to come. And about the same number again would be coming from Shiprock. Plus, there'd be a teacher from each school. A flicker of excitement went through me. We'd had another letter last week, telling us what to expect. It was from someone called Luena Waters, which I thought was a joke name at first. I mean, she's in charge of an island, and she's called Waters. That'd be like a maths teacher called Mrs. Multiplication. But it had turned out to be real. Luena's letter said she and her husband Lyle look after the island. No one really lives there apart from them. It's one of those places that's kept free from human interference so they can protect all the varieties of animals and birds that live there. Their job is to keep it that way and to educate people about all the things that they protect. Luena said that she would organise games and trips and we'd have loads of fun, as well as learning more about geography than you could ever learn in a classroom. She'd written to Shiprock School too. Shona showed me her letter. It included information about shipwreck tours and sightseeing trips to underwater places that hardly anyone has ever seen before. Both letters said how proud they were to be hosting the first ever joint trip between a human school and a mer school. I couldn't wait to get there.
"Right, 8P, listen carefully,"
Miss Platt, our geography teacher, called over the din as the boat drew towards Five Bays Island. We'd been travelling all day and were pretty tired, but the sound of anchors grinding against metal and engines changing gear as we docked in the harbour was enough to reawaken our excitement. From the front deck of the boat, I stared into the twilight of the early evening to try to catch a first glimpse of the island.
"When we arrive, we will be greeted by Mr. and Mrs. Waters. Please be on your best behaviour. They have worked extremely hard to provide an exciting week for you and have promised us a wonderful welcome. So can we ensure that we all show them the utmost respect at all times?"
We all dutifully did the "Yes, Miss Platt" thing as we jostled for the top spot at the front of the boat. I really wanted to dive off the boat and swim up to the shore, but I had the feeling that might not fit in with the best behaviour promise, so I stood and watched with everybody else. Eventually, the boat's engines died,
The gangplank at the front came up, and we were herded into the semi-darkness of Five Bays Harbour, which might be a bit of a grand thing to call something that seemed to consist of a jetty only just large enough to fit our boat alongside it, a scrappy beach covered in stones and abandoned seaweed, and a couple of rowing boats tied up on big round buoys at the other end of the beach. Was this meant to be one of the wonderful Five Bays?
Right. Now then,
Miss Platt mumbled as she pulled a folder out of her bag and started rifling through papers.
Mrs. Waters said she would be here to meet us.
We all peered into the gloom. There was no one around, and no sign that anyone had been around any time recently either. Just us, the beach, and the soft waves lapping gently over the rocky bay. I wandered down to the water's edge. The stones jangled as each wave came in, hissed as each one retreated. Over the other side of the bay, Miss Platt was walking this way and that, waving her arms around and checking her phone for a signal.
"What do you think is going on?"
Aaron was by my side.
"No idea. Maybe they've forgotten us."
We stood in silence for a moment, mesmerized by the rhythm and the tunes of the waves. Mandy came over to join us.
"Miss Platt is talking to someone now. I think they're on their way."
A few minutes later, a shadow came across the beach. As the shadow got closer, I could see it was a tall man, quite gangly, with wavy hair that flopped about all over his head as he hurried towards us. His shirt was half hanging out of his trousers, and his face was covered in dark stubble.
"Nice to see he's made an effort for us," Mandy mumbled.
The man headed over to Miss Platt.
"I'm so sorry to keep you,
Miss Platt," Miss Platt said, holding out an arm to shake his hand.
"No harm done. You're here now." "Yes, yes, of course," the man said.
He turned to go back up the beach and indicated for us to follow.
"Well, I'm Lyle. My wife is, Look, sorry we kept you. Anyway, come on then, I'll take you to your hostel."
Putting it politely, the man seemed completely clueless. He didn't tell us anything about the week ahead, or ask us if we'd had a good journey, or, well, anything. He didn't talk. He just walked, and we followed, shuffling along the sand with our bags and up the slope at the top that took us onto a path through a small wood. For a few minutes amongst the trees, it was virtually pitch black.
"Careful in here, it's very dark," Miss Platt called back, kind of pointing out the obvious. "Keep an eye on the person in front of you and stay close together."
Aaron took my hand as we walked.
"Any excuse?" I whispered.
Not that I minded. The path through the wood led to a dirt track with a couple of houses. One on the left of the track, one further up on the right.
"This is the island's main road," Lyle said. "And that's your hostel,"
he added, pointing to the house to our left. When we got to the door, he rummaged in a pocket for a key and let us in.
"You've eaten?" he asked.
"Yes, thank you," Miss Platt replied. "We had dinner on the boat."
"Good."
Fumbling around on the wall for a light switch, Lyle gestured down the corridor.
"Toilets are down there. Kitchen is all the way to the end and round the corner. Lounge is the room after that,"
he said hurriedly.
"Bedrooms are all upstairs. Boys in the rooms on the left, girls on the right. Teacher's room is at the end. Make yourselves at home. Any questions?"
We stared at him. Was that it? That was our wonderful welcome. Miss Platt shook herself.
What time would you like to meet us in the morning?" "Meet you?"
Lyle replied. He was already halfway out of the door.
"Yes, for our..."
"Hold on a sec." Miss Platt rummaged in her bag and pulled out a sheet of paper.
"Island intro and official orientation," she said, passing the paper to Lyle.
For a split second, his face softened into a slight smile.
Luenna and her funny titles. Always with the alliteration, he said almost to himself.
He passed the sheet of paper back to Miss Platt.
Look, I'm sorry you've not had quite the welcome you were expecting, he said. Things have been a bit... Well, look, we'll sort it all out in the morning, okay? I'll come over at 9, and we'll get together in the lounge and take it from there. Is that all right?
Well, I suppose so, Miss Platt replied tightly. It'll have to be, won't it? Mandy whispered in my ear.
All right, then. Have a good night,
Lyle said. And with that, he left us standing in the corridor and closed the door behind him. Miss Platt took a second to get herself together before regaining her normal teacherly tone.
Right, children, let's get sorted. Take your things up to the bedrooms, and we'll meet in the lounge for hot chocolate in 10 minutes. How does that sound?
It sounded great. Only trouble was, it didn't work out to be quite so good. For one thing, the beds were all unmade, and we had to spend 15 minutes searching all the rooms and cupboards for sheets and duvet covers. Half an hour later, when we'd made the beds, we were more than ready for a cup of cocoa with warm milk. But there was no cocoa, or milk. Miss Platt sighed as she pulled a loose strand of hair back into her ponytail.
I think we should call it a night, she said. I'm sure everything will feel much better after a good night's sleep. Set your alarms, children. 8:30. I want to see you all down here for breakfast.
Breakfast? With no milk?
I'm sure they'll have sorted something out for us by then, she added quickly.
We made for our rooms and said good night.
Sweet dreams,
Aaron whispered as we parted company in the corridor. I wanted to give him a kiss, but the others were all around and would only have teased us. So I made do with a quick smile and a night, sweet dreams, back at him. 5 minutes later, I was in bed and fast asleep. It had been a long day. Lyle seemed to have got his act together a bit the next morning. He was there at 9, like he'd said. He'd even managed to find some milk and bread for us. No butter, but we had jam and Marmite, and even half a box of Frosties to share. He talked while we finished off our breakfast.
I hope you all had a good night's sleep, he began. First of all, can I apologise again for the rather disorganised welcome last night? It's not how we normally like to welcome our visitors. The thing is, well,
He paused and looked away from us. Then he shook his head.
You see, my wife organises these trips, and unfortunately she's had to go away.
Luenna's not here? Miss Platt broke in.
No. She says she's really sorry, and
she organised the whole thing.
Lyle frowned.
Yes, I know.
She said that she would personally supervise us, show us around, give us games to play, bring the two classes together.
Miss Platt started rummaging in her bag again.
Look, there's no need for that.
Lyle waved her paperwork away as if it were a wasp.
I know this isn't quite what you expected, but it will have to do. I'm sorry, it was unavoidable.
His eyes looked dark as he spoke, and his voice had turned a shade sharper. What was going on here? What had happened to Luenna? Miss Platt put the papers back in her bag and sat up straighter.
Right then, she said tightly. What will my children be doing today?
Luenna said there would be a guided tour of the island this morning, followed by a treasure hunt this afternoon.
Yes, that's fine. I'll sort it all out,
Lyle said.
With prizes,
Miss Platt added firmly.
Don't worry, I'll find some prizes.
Miss Platt pulled her ponytail a little tighter.
All right, then, she conceded. That should all be fine.
I finished a mouthful of toast and put my hand up.
Yes, Emily? Do we know when Shiprock will get here?
I asked. Mrs. Sharktail wouldn't let them miss their Saturday lessons, so they were coming today. Shona had said that they'd be getting marine transport for most of the way and swimming the last bit. I wanted to go and meet them when they arrived.
"I believe they'll be here late afternoon or early evening,"
Lyle replied.
"After I left you last night, I went home and dug out most of the paperwork relating to your week. Hopefully the rest of it will be as smooth as a freshly washed pebble."
He tried for a smile. The edges of his mouth went up a tiny smidgen. He looked quite nice when he smiled. Nice, but not happy. The smile definitely didn't get anywhere near his eyes.
"Will you be able to give us our island intro and official orientation as promised?"
Miss Platt asked him. Lyle nodded.
"Yes, of course."
"Right then. Children, go and get ready and meet me back here in 15 minutes. Let's get this field trip started, eh?"
As I brushed my teeth, dragged a comb through my hair, grabbed my shoes and coat and hurried back downstairs, I couldn't help wondering what was in store for us here. If the rest of the island was as mysterious and odd as Lyle, one thing was for sure. There was no way this was going to be your usual boring as butterless bread geography field trip.
Chapter 3 "Right, 8P, settle down and face this way, please."
We gathered round to listen to Miss Platt.
"Good. Now, can you all get into pairs and take a clipboard and a pencil, one between two? I'll hand these out. Lyle is passing round some sheets. You'll need one of these per pair as well."
I glanced at Mandy.
"It's fine. You go with Aaron," she said. "I'll pair up with Julie."
Aaron smiled as he took a clipboard and came over to me. Miss Platt was peering into her bag.
"I've brought these too," she said, as she pulled out some bright red rolled-up bags. "Obviously, we are on an island, and I'm sure you'll be tempted to do a spot of paddling at some point. If you want to, please put your papers and any valuables into these dry bags to save them from getting damp and ruined."
I took a dry bag from Miss Platt and shoved it in my jacket pocket.
"Now, make sure you've all got everything you need," she went on, "and listen to Lyle for further instructions."
Miss Platt stepped back as Lyle cleared his throat.
"Right, okay. Well, as I've said, it's normally my wife who does this sort of thing, so bear with me."
He held up one of the sheets.
"Each pair should have one of these. You'll see there's a list of questions on the front."
We looked down at the sheet. At the top it said, "Island Intro, Treasure Hunt." Below the heading, there were numbered questions with big gaps in between each one for our answers.
"If you turn your sheets over, you'll see a map of the island."
I flipped our sheet over and studied the map. There was a rough outline of an island with straggly lines to mark the paths, groups of contours wiggling around in bendy lines to indicate the hills, some pictures of trees and buildings, and the bays with their names in swirly writing.
"Your map indicates the main layout of the island,"
Lyle explained.
"You'll see a compass in the corner. North is at the top of the island, south at the bottom. There are lines showing all the main paths. It is very important that you stick to these. If it's not on the map, or is dotted or broken, it's possibly dangerous and unstable, so avoid any paths that aren't clear and labelled. The rest should be self-explanatory."
I studied the map a bit more. On the south side of the island, it showed the bay where we'd arrived. This was labelled Harbour Bay. The map showed a line running from the beach through some trees and out to a thicker line with the houses on it. That was the path we'd followed last night. More lines led down to Sandy Bay, Deep Blue Bay, and Pebble Bay. They were the only labels. I put my hand up. Miss Platt noticed me.
"Yes, Emily?"
"How come it's called Five Bays Island, but there are only four bays?" Miss Platt turned to Lyle. Lyle stared at her without replying. I guess he felt silly for being in charge of an island that had obviously been given the wrong name.
There are 5 bays, he said eventually, but only 4 of them are used. Access to the 5th bay is extremely dangerous and not to be attempted. Any other questions?
No one asked anything else.
Good. Well, this is a lovely idea. Miss Platt turned to Lyle. A great way of educating the children about the island, as well as getting them to use their initiative. If there are no further questions, let's get going.
Lyle stopped us.
Oh, one last thing. Please bear in mind that there's a large tidal range here. It's low tide in a couple of hours, when the beaches will be at their biggest, and all the paths will be accessible. Later on today, you'll need to be careful around the coast as the tide comes in quite high, and most of the bays virtually disappear. Apart from Sandy Bay, there's always at least a bit of beach there.
Miss Platt looked at Lyle to see if he'd finished. He gave her a quick nod. Good, she said with a smile. She looked at her watch. Shall we say meet back here in 2 hours?
What do the winners get?
Adrian, one of the boys, asked.
You said there were prizes.
Miss Platt turned to Lyle.
He said. I forgot about that. I'm sorry.
Miss Platt tutted and frowned. Right, how about this, then? First pair back, with all the right answers, is the first to be excused, washing up duties.
We have to wash up,
Adrian whined. Miss Platt looked from side to side and behind her. Do you see any servants around here? She asked, with that special brand of sarcasm that only teachers seem to have.
And, cook too,
Lyle added.
What?
Adrian whined again. I have to say, I think most of the class were with him on this one. Miss Platt tapped her watch.
You'd better get going then, she said. If you don't like washing up or cooking, that is.
The rest of the class hurried off, looking down at their sheets. They were heading in the direction of the woods, the way we'd come last night. I read the first question out as we followed the others. Go to Harbour Bay and see what's afloat. We need the colour of the boat.
That little rowing boat by the shed. You and I walked straight past it when we went down to the water's edge,
Aaron said.
It was blue, I'm sure. At least, I think I am.
I laughed. I'd have said the same. I'm almost positive it's blue.
It was pretty dark, Aaron went on. What do you think? You want to follow all the others down there, or take a chance on blue and get ahead of the game?
I knew Aaron had a competitive side. I'd seen it when we raced each other in the sea or played chess. And when it was me and him together against everyone else, I wanted to win as much as he did. I liked the idea of us being the best team.
Let's go with blue and get ahead, I agreed.
As the rest of the class disappeared into the woods, Aaron looked over my shoulder and read out question number 2.
Sandy Bay is soft and fair, but how many steps will take you there?
I studied the map. Look, there's Sandy Bay. I pointed at the large bay on the east of the island. We need to take the path after the woods, and it'll lead us to the steps, from the look of it. Aaron checked behind us to make sure we were the only ones heading straight for the second question, then took my hand.
Come on,
he said, half walking, half running.
Let's go.
161. 162. I looked up to see if we were nearly there. Aaron was way ahead of me and had just reached the bottom.
207.
He yelled as he scribbled the answer on the sheet. I stopped where I was.
Does that mean I don't have to bother with the last 50 steps?
I called back. Aaron waved me down.
You'll regret it if you don't. It's stunning.
But that's even more steps to go back up again.
Believe me, it's worth it. Come on!
My knees wobbling, I made it to the bottom and looked around. Stretching as far as I could see was a wide, pale yellow sandy beach. In front of us, a thin white line marked the point where the sea lapped against the shore. Aaron sat on the sand and put the clipboard down. I picked it up and glanced at the next question. Just how deep is our deepest bay? And please log height and time of day. What are you doing? I asked as he pulled his sandals off.
Going for a swim. Come on.
What about the treasure hunt? Don't you want to win?
Yeah, I guess, he said. But look at it.
He nodded his head at the sea. Clear turquoise water glinted and winked with a thousand tiny sparkles as the morning sun beamed across it. Further out, the turquoise gave way to a deeper blue. I could almost hear the waves whispering my name.
There's still no sign of anyone else yet, Aaron went on. Let's at least have a quick paddle.
I sat next to him and pulled my sandals off too. Okay, just a quick one though, I agreed. We rolled up our trouser legs and stood up. I grabbed the treasure hunt sheet and pulled it off the clipboard.
What are you taking that for?
Aaron asked. Just to make sure nothing happens to it while we're gone.
Good idea. We don't want one of the other pairs pinching it and setting us back.
I laughed. I actually meant some critter might come along and think it's food. But yeah, that's a good point too. I folded the sheet, unhooked the pencil, zipped them both into the dry bag we'd been given, and shoved it in my pocket.
Ready?
Aaron grinned. Yep, let's go. We ran together down to the water's edge. The sand was soft and warm. As we stood ankle-deep in the cool water, and Aaron smiled at me, I was pretty sure I'd never felt so happy in my life. Then he leaned forward and kissed me, and the happy feeling quadrupled. I wrapped my arms round his waist and leaned my head on his shoulder. A whole week of this stretched ahead. I was pretty sure I was the luckiest half-girl, half-mermaid in the whole wide world. Aaron was looking out to sea.
Shall we?
I knew what he was asking. Aaron was just like me. To a semi-mer, standing ankle-deep in water is a bit like a chocoholic looking at a shop full of Mars bars. I followed his gaze. The sea was sparkling as if it were covered in jewellery. It seemed to be speaking to us, beckoning us. I couldn't resist. My ankles were already beginning to tingle, and I could feel my toes starting to web together. Go on then, I said. It's a beautiful morning. We could have a quick swim, and I'm sure we'll be dry by the time we get to the next question.
And we'll probably still be ahead of the game.
Aaron had already let go of my hand and was wading into the water. He was up to his knees and his trousers were wet when he turned round and smiled.
Here goes!
Then he dived right under the water and disappeared. I had a quick look behind us. There was still no one on the beach. I took a few more steps, then dived in. The water was smooth and silky and took all my thoughts away as it enveloped me, filling me with warmth. A moment later, I felt my body start to change. My legs tingled and tightened and stretched out. A moment later, they had disappeared altogether. In their place, my tail had formed. Purple and green, sparkling and bright, it glinted as I flicked it, scattering rainbow droplets of water around me. We swished along together, through the water that was so clear you could see everything. Golden sand lined the seabed. It puffed up into dusty bubbles as we swam over it. Every now and then, we passed a small cluster of rocks with thin strands of seaweed reaching upwards like a bouquet of flowers, or a single fish darting past as if in a hurry to get to an appointment. Shoals of fish sailed by in formations as perfect as gymnastic teams. I could have stayed there all day. Except, obviously, we couldn't. Not unless we wanted to get into huge trouble with Miss Platt. The thing about her was, she was one of the nicest teachers at Brightport, always friendly and smiley,
but firm enough that we generally did what she said. You always wanted one of her smiles, not one of her stern looks. Which meant we should get back to the treasure hunt. I didn't want us to be the pair who got the stare for arriving back 2 hours after everyone else. I tapped Aaron on the arm. I think we should head back. He nodded and pointed upwards.
Let's check where we are.
We swam up to the surface and looked around. We'd come a long way out in the short time we'd been swimming. That was the thing with being in the water. You lost track of your bearings. A tail was much quicker than legs. I could still see Sandy Bay, but we'd swum round the coast as well as out to sea, and as I looked back to land, I noticed we'd almost reached the next bay. Ducking back under the water, I could see a ledge ahead of us, where the seabed dropped right down and the water was even more blue and clear. Aaron pointed ahead.
This must be Deep Blue Bay. Wasn't the next question taking us here?
We have to find out the depth of the deepest bay, I replied.
So what do you reckon? I'd say the deepest bay is probably the one with deep in its name, wouldn't you?
I guess so. Should we take a look?
Why not? Perhaps we can get in another answer before we go back. We'll be miles ahead then.
We swam into the bay together. As we crossed the shelf, the water grew suddenly colder. I shivered and looked down. Below me, the seabed had practically disappeared. I swam lower and lower, but it didn't seem to be getting closer. Aaron was beside me.
Wow, bit weird, isn't it?
I nodded. Beautiful too, though. Look. I pointed at a group of about 10 fish ahead of us. They were dark blue with a pale, thin yellow stripe running down each side. They seemed to shine and glint as they moved. Silvery balls that looked like fluffy diamonds, but were probably some kind of rare jellyfish, bounced and danced around us. We swam lower still. Eventually, we came to the bottom. Huge rocks lined the seabed. In between them, fish of all shapes and sizes moved about lazily, as if there was no need to hurry down here. A lobster reached out a claw in a gentle yoga stretch, then drew it back in. Plants softly opened and closed, like large mouths gently yawning. Long, solitary fish zigzagged between the stones like expert skiers, gracefully swooping along a slalom course. From the seabed, we could barely see the surface. How are we going to figure out the depth from here? I asked. Maybe we should just go back.
I agree.
Aaron started swimming upwards and I followed him. As we rose, the water grew gradually clearer again. I realized we were heading in towards the island, not back out to sea. Ahead of us, a rocky cliff rose almost vertically out of the water. It looked like a wall. I turned to Aaron. Shall we? He nodded and we went to take a closer look.
Hey!
Aaron pointed at something metallic on the wall as we approached from under the water.
A ladder!
We followed it as we swam upwards. Look! I pointed at some markings beside the ladder, spaced at regular intervals. The first one I could see said 140 m. Swimming higher, the next said 150 m. A little higher, 160 m.
They're measurements, Aaron exclaimed. Swim up to the next one.
We swam higher, 170 m. You're right, I said. These must mark the height from the bottom of the bay.
So we just need to get the reading at the waterline, and we've answered the third question.
Aaron grinned.
We're still ahead of the pack.
We swam up to the surface and looked for the closest number. A little way above it, a marking read 235 m.
235 meters. Bingo!
Aaron grinned. Hmm, that reading is a few meters above the surface, I said. Let's call it 232.
Perfect.
We looked around us. The ladder led up to a flat rock just above the surface of the water. The lower part of the rock was orangey red. A little way up, there was a line where the orangey red gave way to grey. I guessed that marked the highest water line. "Shall we get out and get dry?" I suggested. "Then we can check the next question and figure out whether to go back to Sandy Bay or just carry on from here."
"Barefoot," Aaron added.
"Oh, yeah. We should have thought about that." We pulled ourselves out of the water and sat on the flat rock. As soon as we did, I felt my tail flicker and twitch. Within moments, it had melted back into my legs. My trousers were wet, as was my top. We shook ourselves like damp dogs and squeezed out the edges of our clothes. Luckily for us, it was a warm day. We'd soon dry. I took the bag from my pocket and grabbed the pencil and treasure hunt sheet. I noted down our answer, together with the time. "Want to know the next question?" I asked. Aaron squeezed closer to look at the sheet with me.
"Bring back a stone from Pebble Bay, and we'll know if you cheated, by the way," he read aloud.
"There must be something special about the stones at Pebble Bay," I mused. I turned over the map to see where it was. On the other side of Deep Blue Bay, from where we were now, the drawing showed a long, winding path that snaked back up to the main road, and from there down to Pebble Bay. I guessed that would be the route everyone else would take. It was the only one shown on the map. The problem was, the cliff in between this side and that one was a sharp, sheer face. The only way we could reach that path was to go back in the water and swim across the bay. We'd only just started to get dry. For once, I didn't fancy going back in the water. Plus, when I studied the map a bit more closely, I noticed something else. It wasn't marked as a path in the same way as the others, but there was a very thin dotted line that led from somewhere a little higher than the rocks we were sitting on, around the coast and directly across to Pebble Bay. It looked about half as long as the proper way of getting there. The other option would be to swim round, but in between the two bays, the rocks jutted out a long way. The wiggly line definitely looked like the quickest route. As I studied the map, Aaron stood up and scanned the rocks behind us. "Are you thinking what I'm thinking?" I asked, standing up to join him.
"I hope so. Look,"
he pointed up to the right.
"See where there's a gap in the trees and bushes over there?"
I craned my neck to follow where he was pointing.
"Uh-huh. The gap seems to extend across in a line. Maybe it's some kind of disused path. I reckon that path is a shortcut to Pebble Bay. Fancy checking it out?"
I was already shoving the sheet and bag back in my pocket and looking for the first foothold. "You bet," I said, grinning at him. "Let's do it." Chapter 4. We clambered over the rocks, helping each other on the steep, slippery sides, and not thinking about the cuts and bruises our legs would be covered in the next morning. From where we'd been looking earlier, we'd slightly misjudged exactly how many boulders we were going to have to scramble over. As I was climbing over the 9th or 10th rock, I remembered something else we were ignoring too. "Aaron," I said. He was ahead of me, stretching across a jagged boulder.
"What?"
he called back.
"Do you remember what Lyle said about the paths?"
"What about them?"
"About them being dangerous. About how we were to stick to the clearly labelled ones."
Aaron stopped and turned round.
"Oh, yeah. Do you want to turn back and swim?"
I glanced back to where we'd come from. The sea seemed miles away. Ahead, the thin, scraggly path was only about 4 more boulders from us. I shook my head.
"Come on, let's just get there. We've come this far already. How much more difficult can it be once we reach the path?"
Which was quite a good question. Finding the path wasn't the problem. Following it wasn't too difficult either. I mean, yes, it was a bit overgrown in places, and we had to keep dodging sticky out branches and avoiding nettles by ducking down or veering sideways or climbing carefully over them one leg at a time. I was beginning to feel like an expert burglar avoiding an elaborate maze of infrared beams. A barefoot burglar, I might add. My feet were going to be raw by the end of the day. But none of that was the difficult part. The difficult part was when the path suddenly narrowed to the width of my foot, and one side of it became a sheer drop down the side of a cliff. My heart thumped hard in my chest. So hard, it felt as though it might unbalance me. I stopped walking and gripped a tree branch to steady myself.
"You okay?"
Aaron called back. I didn't dare reply. Even talking felt as if it might knock me off balance, even breathing. So I held my breath, carefully studied every footstep, and kept going.
"Em, I said, are you okay?"
Aaron twisted round. As he did, I looked up and nodded. Unfortunately, I chose a bad moment to look away from the path, as my next step went right onto something sharp and prickly.
Youch!
I hopped onto the other foot and slipped on a leaf. A second later, I'd lost my footing altogether. My leg brushed the edge of the path as I fell.
Ah!
Aaron reached back to grab my hand, but he was too late.
Emily!
He yelled.
Aaron!
I called back as I watched him lose his balance too.
No!
We bumped and bounced and slid and fell down and down through thorns, rocks, bushes. My clothes ripped, my skin burned, my brain filled with questions. Why hadn't we listened to Lyle? Why didn't I ever listen? Why could I never resist an adventure? And what were our odds of surviving a fall from the top of a steep, craggy, dangerous cliff edge?
Emily?
I lifted my head to see Aaron a little ahead of me. He was scrambling to his feet and coming over. I pulled a few twigs out of my hair and carefully got to my feet.
Ouch!
Are you okay?
Aaron was beside me. He had a line of mud down one side of his face and a scratch down the other that was turning redder by the second. I rubbed my leg. Just twisted my ankle a bit, I think, I said.
I'll be fine. How about you?
I reached out to touch his cheek. That looks sore.
It's nothing,
Aaron said.
As long as you're okay, I'm fine.
I looked around. We'd landed in some kind of ditch. We were still a long way from the bottom of the cliff.
Looks like this ditch broke our fall,
Aaron said, looking both ways along it. In one direction, a big tree lay right across the ditch. I nodded my head in the opposite direction.
Let's head this way and see if it leads to some kind of path, I suggested.
We walked in silence for a bit, probably both too shell-shocked to work out what to say. What if there was no way out of here? The ditch was too far from the edge to jump into the sea, and too high. What if there was no path out of it? We'd all left our phones at the house, as there was barely any reception on the island, so we couldn't get in touch with anyone to tell them where we were. Not that we'd be able to tell them that anyway, as we had no idea where we were.
Why?
Why hadn't we just stuck to the paths as we'd been told? Just when things were going so well, why couldn't I for once?
Emily?
Aaron broke into my thoughts. I caught him up. We'd reached the end of the ditch. On our left, the cliff rose sharply. To our right, it plunged down almost as sharply. But ahead of us, the ditch narrowed down into a thin squiggle and led to something that looked like a path. Aaron squeezed through the narrow ditch and jumped down onto the path. I followed him down and looked around. Now we were out of the ditch, I could see the sea beneath us. Dark blue water turning into frothy white swirls as it hit the rocks below. We set off along the path and rounded a bend. The path carried on, but down to the side, almost hidden by plants that were growing across it like a five-bar gate, was what looked like a concrete step.
Aaron, look!
We went over and pulled the plants to the side. It wasn't just a concrete step. It was a whole staircase leading down. But to what? Aaron looked at me.